It's funny how many talks are circulating around in my brain, kind of trying to figure out who should come through. But the last one to settle is troubled times and troubled minds. And any one of you who wants to check off right now and leave, that's fine. I know you've probably heard a lot of similar kinds of sort of talks and things, but I'm getting a lot of feedback from people who are having a hard time, who are relating very much to the social media, the news factors, the stuff that's going on in the world, and starting to have their own mindsets affected deeply by all of that. And you know, you can turn off the news, you can turn off social media, and most people tend not to. But if you are at all caught in that, and your mind is going off in its own direction, and you're starting to have, you know, all of the strum and drawing of the psyche that is kind of out of sorts, what to do? What to do? And of course, you know, this is a Rudy class, and I talk about the same thing every single week on some level. But I think the really important thing to understand is the difference between intention and action, and how much that can impact the responsiveness to the toxicity of the world we're kind of living in right now. Which, by the way, may be no more toxic than it ever has been in the history of the planet. I was thinking recently about, you know, how lucky I was that I don't have to go into a cave. I go into a nicely comfortable home. How much I don't have to go out looking for food and killing it, and bringing it back and cooking it, and on, all the stuff that the world has been like over the course of centuries. How brilliantly blessed we are with comfort in this lifetime. So all the, excuse me, the mind events that are occurring are kind of the source of a level of discomfort that the world is really, really not throwing at us. And it's possible that if you had to go out and kill a deer for lunch and dinner and do all of that, you'd be in a more comfortable zone inside. I don't really know, but the reality is that in our blessed insulated, comfortable lives, there's so much disruption. And I think a lot of people intend on some level to sit more often, take a breath more often, stop what they're doing, go inside and try to make themselves available to this inner work, and then don't. You know, they just go, well, maybe later, or I got to do this, or the phone rings, or the there's a, you know, a text message coming through, or whatever comes in to disrupt our intentional life. And so we end up with what is our active life, which is often very different than the intention. And finding a way to activate your intention is really important, and it's a muscle. It's just say, do this now, do it, do it. And part of the problem is waiting for the instruction to come, the do it instruction from your mind, which is so distracted usually, or from the outside, like I don't know what would suddenly come in to inform you and say, okay, this is the moment. Now you got to take a breath. Now you got to open. Now you got to sit quietly. Because if you do that, there is something waiting for you that is calming, nurturing, embracing, loving, all of those qualities. And why one doesn't stop to go there and do that is primarily because you are waiting for a distracted mind to give you the directive to go inside to do this. And the distracted mind may do that, but then it's distracted again from doing it. So what happens is you live a life that is full of great intention. You know, the road to hell, you know, is paved with good ones. And it's a problem if you're not listening to a higher directive, if you will. You're going to be listening to your mind, and your mind is not a great guide. Sorry, guys. You may love your minds. You may think they're great, and you may think you're smart, and you may think you're well-read and you're well-informed and all of that stuff. But if your mind is not getting you to that opening, to that, then it's not helping you. And if you're just suffering and the mind is just digging into and enjoying the suffering or whatever it does with your suffering, then you're caught in a terrible, terrible loop. So how to inspire people to not listen to the mind, but find their way in to this deeper space and allow it to be the thing that causes them to open. Because the real directive in your life is not from outside, it's from inside. The great thing about this particular practice is it's so focused on the inner. It so goes into the chakras, and it really goes into, at least with the mind, an open heart, an open gut. There are all these facilities inside you that are waiting and available and at any point ready to help you. And Rudy says, ask for help. But again, well-intended minds, psyches, are not going to get you there. What gets you there is the doing, or the really trying to live as much as possible in this inner opening of yourself. Not having to go there over and over, but to be there. To allow yourself in a very natural way, and it's not an unnatural thing, to find yourself living in open territory. And what happens when you start to do that is really rather remarkable, because you find directives. I will talk about my own self here. I am getting directives all the time. It's not like some grandiose kind of thing. It's simple. And it actually wants you to be responsive, to do a good thing for the person you're living with. You know, I was sitting in the chair last night, I have my own dramas and things. And Blanche walks in with a plate of cheese and crackers. Totally unasked for, unexpected, just delivered. Where the acknowledgement in her being came from to do that, I mean, I can tell you where I think it comes from, because she has an open heart. But her doing that was so thoughtful, in a mindful sense, but in a larger, more open mindful sense. It was an awareness that this could be an offering of kindness and goodness. And it was so beautiful and so well received that it made my whole evening, and it just made me feel like known, witnessed, comforted, thought of, all of those things that then take you into your own inner space. That's why I talk about kindness a lot. It's such an extraordinary thing, and sometimes it just feels like a natural flow, but sometimes if you go deep inside, something will tell you, get some cheese and crackers and present it. I had a thing the other day where I have a photograph of a friend from San Rafael who I haven't seen in a long time, not a student, and something said, call her. And I went, okay. And I picked up the phone and I called her. We hadn't spoken in maybe a year and a half or 2 years, because the pandemic has had such a bizarre impact on social life. But I just missed her, and this thing said, do it now. I don't question that. I just called. And she said immediately that I could never have called at a better moment, ever. She shared with me, I mean, she has a tragic story of the loss of a son and a granddaughter. Son trying to save the granddaughter, and I've talked about her years ago. But it was coming up in a very big way for her. And at that moment, she was looking for signs. And she had couple of signs, which were really interesting for people who look for signs. She was thinking of going on a trip and went to a luggage store, and there was a piece of old luggage, actually with the initials of her son, three initials, who had passed away. And then she has a little memorial for her son, and she had a kind of a music box in that memorial that had been broken for years. And it started playing in the middle of the night. Made no sense. And then she went over to it in the morning. It was still broken, and she was feeling like touched by the universe. And she was just sitting there feeling all of this attunement and wanting to hold on to the lost part of her life. And then suddenly the phone rang, and I was calling for no reason. But it was like the frosting on the cake, in a way. It just spoke to her. And I did not know that if I made a phone call at that time, it would have that impact. But the alignment had nothing to do with me. It had nothing to do with my understanding of things, because I don't have a clue. It just said, do this. And I went, okay. I didn't even say okay. I just do it. And I'm telling you, that inner space that lifts us up and directs us informs our intention. And then if you activate the thing that's coming, it doesn't have to be thoughtful. It doesn't have to be, I should, I might, maybe if I do that. None of that. It's just like, call somebody, do it. And you do it, and you watch this thing unfold, and it's so beautiful. It's so unexpected, and you just fulfill something that's bigger than you. You don't know how, and you don't know why. But because you are part of this inner directive, this space that knows more than you do, and that informs you in such a remarkable way, when you arrive at that space, and you can do it at any point in the day, and you can live there, it is so directive, it is so informative and helpful, that it will make you a gift to people around you and a gift to the world. And it doesn't have to be any more than getting on the phone or making a platter of cheese for someone to nibble on. I'm telling you, it's not a rocket scientist who can do this kind of work. Every one of us can do this kind of work. It's being thoughtful and then active. It's being mindful and active. It's being emotionally connected and active. It's living the thing that is happening inside you. And if you are only witnessing it, looking at it, thinking about it, debating, well, do I have time? Should I do it later? What should I do? If you're doing all of that, you are in the world of noise and the world of disturbance. And many of us live there a lot. And then we have this thing of, oh, God, I should sit for a few minutes, or I should take a breath. And then you do or you don't. But let me just say, if you do, it's better than not doing. But the important part of all this is, if you can allow yourself to reside in this very simple and open space within you, and it's not a big deal, take a breath, ask for help to surrender, let go of your noise, your mind, your fears, your concerns, your involvement with the toxic universe, and go into this place inside. It is not toxic. It is quiet. It is embracing. It is loving. It cares for you. If you can do that, and if you do that, you will have a different life. Not that the world will change as a result necessarily, not that your own mind will change. Your mind will still be there in whatever mode it comes into. And, you know, as you live life more and more, it will have more to react to. So in my, you know, my usual sort of notes about being old, there comes a point where the toxicity of the world is not anywhere near compared to the toxicity of your own body, in a way, where you really are starting to decompose and stuff really starts to hit you. And it's punishing and difficult. And I'm not looking for any of you to send me letters about medications that will help or things I should do, but I'm just telling you, I'm watching the body go through a dissolution that is not fun, is not easy. And so as that happens, and let me just unfortunately tell you, if you live long enough, it will happen. You need this capacity not this intention, but this capacity to go in and do this. And it's kind of interesting to me because I'm watching some of the people who teach spiritual work, you know, and have, you know, they're online, and people I respect and care about. And I'm watching a few of them, and I'm getting this sense of, wow, there is a humility happening here. There is a person involving someone who doesn't know it all, someone who's people who say, who've kind of talked about being a permanent awakened being, talking about impermanence in that, how it comes and goes. And I'm going, I never thought anybody in that place of ownership would ever talk like that. But they're starting to talk like that, and they're opening my heart, because my own awakening and sense of being in touch with, if whatever you want to call it, the divine, has, as you all know, periods of fullness beyond understanding and absence beyond understanding. And it's not something that is comprehensible, but it is something that occurs, just like winter and spring occur. You know, winter, everything goes away and then it comes back. You know, if you want permanence, I was thinking about this earlier, if you want permanence, live in a desert or live in the Arctic Circle. It will be permanent, cold all the time or warm or hot all the time. If you want the rest of the possibility of life, you live where it's changeable, like this. And today, of course, this week, the trees are blossoming. It's beautiful beyond belief, of course, beyond understanding in a way, because the last 2 days in April have been 90 degrees here. That's not natural. So something unnatural is going on in the world, which of course is beautiful and lovely, and like it's not supposed to be in April like this. So you have two cross currents of feelings about what's going on. You know, stuff's going on. What's to stay? Say Blanche and I were out yesterday and got caught in a thunderstorm that just drenched us. And it was like, you know, the awfulness of being drenched. And then there was the incredible thing of life being like vibrant. I haven't been drenched in years. And I thought, this is amazing. You know, this is incredible being drenched. And life does those kinds of things to people. You don't know what it's going to do. You're not blessed in a way that you don't get drenched. You know, you get what you get. And you learn to live accordingly. And as you get older, there's drenching that comes from all different sides, from the outside and also from the inside. And the changeability is shocking, shocking. And so I look at my own self, and I woke up this morning going, I don't know if I can teach this class. I don't know what I could say. I don't know what to do. I had this bizarre, strange feelings inside. And trust me, every day it's different. I mean, almost every hour it's different. And I don't want to talk about that as a weekly thing. On the other hand, I come into this room, space, I sit with you, and this unbelievable energy comes through this body for you because you showed up. It comes through in a way that is beyond comprehension in normal mindful aspect. It's just this thing that loves you. And I get to feel it almost like I love you, but I do. But this is like, not even, this has nothing to do with me. It just comes through. And so this person who woke up this morning who had no capacity to sit here and do this was kind of washed to the side, and the energy just came through and is coming through as I speak. You know, when I'm done with this class and after we're brunch, because we have luckily and happily people physically here, then the day gets shut down again for me. And I go through that every week. Everybody goes away and it's like, oh, back to the body, back to the physical, back to the limitation. And that's when my work starts. My work is not teaching the class. My work is, what do I do when everybody leaves? And I'm all by myself or just with Blanche, and, you know, and we help each other. And yet there's a sense of aloneness and a sense of, I want all my people I love back in my space, like in a perfect world, you'd all live here. You know, when I was living in the ashram years ago, I mean, I was in heaven. I would walk out my door and it was filled with people like you. And in some cases, it was you, you know, and it was like, oh my God, I loved that. Living alone, living with just one other person, you know, minus my children, minus my grandchildren, even though they're nearby, you know, living alone is a whole other thing. And I am, at the age of 80, learning how to do that, not happily. I have to say, I like having you guys around. I really, really do. The universe uses me well. It makes me feel comforted by having your presence. And I have nothing but gratitude for you. I do wonder how long I'll be able to be in communication like this. You know, the body is clearly going on its own ride. But as long as it will let me sit here and talk to you, I will. As long as you want to hear the same words week to week, that's fine with me. The energy is better than the words on some level. And I love sitting with you. I just love being with you. In a way, this is my ashram. This is the ashram that I, in a way, loved as perhaps one of the most wonderful times of my life. Although when my children came, they became an ashram for me that was really spectacular. And Josh was once in the ashram, so that was kind of amazing with all the kids playing all the time. It's a beautiful form of life. It's called community, which I love. And community is spectacular if you have it. If you don't have it, create it. Make the phone call. Do the thing that you're directed to do to find connection with other people. And I tell all of this to you too. You can call. You can call me. Probably a good thing, actually. You know, just call and, you know, if I'm there, if I pick up the phone, you know, we have a dialogue. But what I really want you to know is that this human experience, this exchange of energies, this caring about one another is at the core of the human dynamic. Caring about one another, bringing a platter of cheese to another person, getting on the phone and calling somebody because something at that moment told you to do it, and not waiting another hour or two. Just do it. Do it. Follow the inner directive of your life and all of the things around you that are not resolving well, the things around you that the world is creating that you don't like, you know, all of the stuff that makes life difficult. It's not going anywhere. It's the history of the planet. It's the history of life in the world. Why would it be different now? And the great teachings have always come about people saying, go inside, be present with yourself, touch this deeper space, be prayerful, whatever the directive is, it's an inner directive. And it makes you go to a place that will hold your hand as you walk through the craziness of what's unfolding around us or even in your own brain. You know, that's problematic. And if you don't have control over that, I mean, you know personally, you know it from everyone you know around you. People who are not dealing well with their own minds are not as toxic as the world. And it's not helpful. It's not good for you. It's not good for anybody. So what you really want in this lifetime is to be the antidote to toxicity. Be the antidote. You are the antidote. And because you sit here, and each of you have been sitting here for a fairly long time, you guys, I don't know if you understand how important you are, how gifted you are, how lucky you are, how blessed you are, and how chosen you are. But you are that which is the antidote. You are the antidote to the suffering, the sadness, the misery of other people's lives and your own. So find that medication, if you will, that space, meditation, whatever it is that takes you into the place of healing, of renewal, of rejoicing, of blessedness, of prayerfulness. Find that place in yourself and use it to let you become the voice of this antidotal, this quality of the antidote. You know, that allows you to feel for other people and care about them and not put yourself at the source and the core, because the source and the core bypasses you and goes right to something holy. You are not the core. You're the obstruction to the core. There is an entry point at the core of you, but boy, oh boy, it goes deep and it bypasses you and it finds the other thing, which is the source of who and what you are. And if you find that, and if you touch it, it filters through in such a remarkable way that you get touched by it and you get to touch others with it. And it's a life worth living. That's all I can tell you. So I'm in blabber mode, I think, you know, there's my tendency. So I'm going to kind of cut it off. I got to say to you, you know, let us try and help each other. Let us inspire each other. Let's do the best we can. Keep this thing going. I will say there is something behind us that is divine and amazing and will support you if you allow it to. So try to find that space. Thank you. Okay, just questions. Anybody hey. Have a question? Wendy. Thank you. Phil.
Thanks, Bruce. So paraphrasing.
A little louder for me, what?
Oh, sorry. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Paraphrasing a little bit, you mentioned that call to action, you know, make a phone call or take a step this way or that way. Could you speak to where the call to action is more of an activist role to actually, you know, deal or approach or go to change or help something that really is not so great? And there's that, not just dealing with it inside, but being called to action to deal with it in the physical, and sure. Is the approach different or whatever you might say?
Yeah, I mean, again, this is a diagnostic thing. The call to action can come from your mind, from your emotions, or from your depth of being. And I have to say there's a difference in each of those. If it's from your mind, it very likely, it could have reason behind it. It could have good intention behind it. And it might be a proper thing to do, but it's not the same thing as being told deeply, profoundly, call someone. And you can feel the difference because one is literally up here and the other comes from this deeper, more powerful, more central space in your body. And the more you enter into that space in yourself and learn how to operate in that space and be attuned to that space, you become someone who serves that rather than serving this. I used to always have calls to action. I described the one, I mean, I used to, you know, when I went on a, when I always thought I was going to try to save the world, and I was picketing Dean Rusk at the Hilton Hotel speaking in New York. And you know, I was trying to push over a police car. And my mind told me, go do this. This is the right thing to do. And the police were charging at me and they were on horses and they had clubs and they went like that. And if I hadn't pulled my hand away from the car, they would have destroyed my hand. Instead, they dented the car. And I was like, you know, but I'm doing the right thing. I'm a call to action. It was part of something I was supposed to do to save the world and picket this guy who was talking about the war zones in Vietnam. And I went and told Rudy about it. And he said, don't go to any more of those. That's not the voice that will lead you to anything. And I never did again. You know, I never went back to those kinds of things because I saw a distinction between the mind trying to do the right thing and this voice inside, which is rightness itself. And they're different. They really are different. And people with really good minds, meaning cognitively good, get themselves in trouble all the time. You know, I read this thing, I probably have said it here in class a lot, but Einstein said it was never his mind that gave him the solutions to problems. That's really fascinating to me. It wasn't the mind. And we all know that in a way. There's something deeper. Every movie I ever wrote did not come from my mind. I could never, my mind wouldn't know how to do it. But this other thing inside knows how to do that stuff. And it, if you get out of the way, it does it with such finesse and such brilliance and such capacity. But when the mind comes into play, and you know, I've had times, of course, like everybody, where the mind comes into play, it messes it up. And then you got to go back to this thing to correct it, which is what I always would do. You know, I remember when I was writing and I was trying to write a scene and I didn't know where to go next and my mind wouldn't tell me. I would lie down with the problem in place and wait for this thing to come back up, which it did. and I would wake up with the solution to the problem. But it didn't come from here. It came from inside. So that's the difference. And if you can figure that out and start to sense the difference, and it's a matter of just experiential knowing, boy, oh boy, does that change your life. Okay.
Thanks, Bruce. That was a beautiful answer.
Anybody else?
Hey, Bruce.
Yeah. Erica.
Oh, hi. Okay. So So 9 times out of 10, maybe more, everything you talk about are things that I've been really deeply thinking about maybe the day before or that week or something. And so I've been on a media diet recently, and I'm kind of an on and off person with that. And I'm very much aware of how, you know, media is an addiction, but it's, and another thing you said about history. So one of the ways I was weaning myself off of, you know, being irritated all the time about being angry and irritated from watching the news is by listening to some history podcasts. And when I studied a little bit of actual history, I was thinking, wow, okay, things are not that bad right now. And it's exactly what you said. And I've also, you know, I mean, this is not recent. I've also, you know, been weaning myself off of being a parent and becoming alone. And this cat that I have jumped through my window 3 times, you know, and I was like, okay, I have some company now. But so it's just incredible to me. So I think that we are connected. Like, okay, so social media makes us feel connected. And then when you remove it, you go through a bit of a withdrawal of feeling like, oh my God, I'm not connected. But when you sit with that feeling and, you know, like do the practice, do the work, I feel as though we are connected. And I think it's not a coincidence that you talk about the things that I've been thinking about. I think we are connected, even though I barely ever call you. And I feel like we are connected. And I just wanted to know if you think that's true, or it's just a meaningful coincidence, or, I just wanted to hear about that. Yeah.
The answer is yes. We are connected. It is true. I mean, we are connected through this particular practice. We're connected in ways that are way beyond that. We are connected to the totality, which is like something else altogether. But when people come into the sphere of your consciousness, the level of connectivity enhances itself. It grows more dramatically. And there is a real expression of that that goes on in this lifetime and beyond this lifetime. Rudy's been gone for 50 years, but I am connected. You know, Rudy is a passageway. And now he's not even really defining that passageway. I mean, my heart goes out to him and I go through that space, through that doorway, but it's beyond. And it is really exquisitely connected to a whole. We always talk about the totality. It is totality. And it really does define us in a way. And that's why there is such a thing as communication. There's such a thing as reaching out and actually dialoguing with someone. And then there's this thing of feeling for someone and praying for someone and having a kind of an exchange with someone, even though they're not there.
Yeah, I just wanted to tell you that I had a very good friend pass away this week. And I found out just hours after he passed away, and I meditated. I was, you know, in that mode of, oh my God, if you're here, please connect with me. And I felt his presence everywhere in the form of love.
Yes. Well, I mean, sorry for your loss there, but I've had the same thing in the last couple of months, including a friend who died last week, who's from this class, and another who died 2 months ago. My experience of their presence is remarkable for me. I don't know how to talk about it really, but one of them, Jose, my friend Jose, was living in my house with me. I mean, he was like floating around the space, and all he wanted to do was tell me how beautiful it all was. He was just joyous beyond belief. I have never experienced that before. He just wanted to break through the ether and say, it's incredible. It is so beautiful. And then this friend, Michael Galante, who died a week ago, whose funeral I went to on Monday, he was filling the space of the chapel where the funeral was. And I just felt washed through by him. It was so simple and clear and non-complicated. I mean, it wasn't even joy or absence of joy. It was like presence, just there. And I go, you know, maybe I'm reading into all of this. I really don't know. But the feeling is so strong of this continuum and this beauty that exists beyond. So, I mean, one can believe and have faith or whatever in all of that. That, you know, who knows how we're going to, what we're going to find at that moment. But if the experiences that I'm having in the passing of people, in sitting with each of you, in being connected to people like Rudy and my parents and a whole history of people who've gone beyond, all of that is very defining. And all I can say is when I sit and feel totality, if you will, everybody's there, live, dead, possibly future tense, all there. And all I can say from that is, you know, we are lucky to be connected, and especially to be on a similar wavelength, because God knows I'm surrounded by people who are on very different wavelengths. And I don't understand how people make it together in the world at all, but there is a mechanism of appreciation of differences and reaching out in kindness to help whoever is in front of you. It doesn't matter how they got there. It only matters that you are there in their presence, and your job is to love them and be kind. It's not to ask. You just do your work. Do the work. That's the whole answer. Do the work. Be the antidote. Well, sorry, I know this goes on and on and on and on, but I mean, I'm open to, you know, going on, but if not, thank you. Thank you all for being here again. Those of you who listen to this on your own at some later time, just know these words are, they come from a kind of a timeless space and can work for people at any point in time. And you can always revisit them. I do every so often. I go back and listen to the talks the way Blanche tells me I should, and I find, oh, interesting, smart, and I get as much benefit from them as maybe anybody else does. So it's not me, obviously. It's not me, it's us, and we are all here together. Love you guys. See you the next time, whenever that is. I hope you have a wonderful week or two, and much love.